be looking at temperatures in the mid-60s. We have a northeast wind right now, 5 to 8 miles per hour, becoming southeasterly later in the afternoon. And overnight, temperatures will only drop to about 42 as the ground is warming up and will warm up throughout the remainder of this week with temperatures expected to be in the 70s. As you are heading out this morning right now in our listening audience, there in Goldsboro, it's 35, and in Jacksonville, 41, under clear skies, as a matter of fact. And well, most of the day will be clear skies for all of us here in the listening area. A beautiful day ahead of us. And I do want to make mention right now, offshore, we do have a small craft advisory effect, but that will be changing later today.
It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And as always, a pleasure to have joining us in the morning. We have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins and of Harvell and Collins. And with that, gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Lockwood. How
good
are
morning,
you?
Lockwood.
Doing well. All right, so what is the topic today? By the way, I just want to make a quick comment. The conversations over the past 2 weeks related to elective shares and the whole arrangement with that has been, I think, very, very informative, and I want to compliment you on that. I think a lot of people really gained a new understanding of how estates are handling. So I just want to make mention of that, the topic on elective shares. But that was in the past. So what is the topic for today?
Okay, Lockwood. There are several different ways in which we can hold title to real property.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody talks about, I have my deed. And a deed is a great thing. But when you read the deed, there can be language in the deed that more particularly would categorize the way in which the property is titled, and it has certain consequences. And so right out of the gate, let's say about this one very quickly. It's kind of the easiest one. If the deed is between a husband and a wife, or between spouses, I should now say,
mm-hmm.
Any spouses that are married at the time that the deed is granted to the two of them, and both of their names are grantees on the deed, in other words, they received the grant,
mm-hmm.
and these two people at the time that they received the grant were married, it was a certificate of marriage, then the property is known as tenants by entirety. And in effect, the consequence of that is that they own it together, jointly. And if either one of them dies, it passes to the survivor, notwithstanding any other last will and testament or agreement or whatever else might be out there. The bottom line is that the fact that the deed is in both names and was granted to them at a time that they were married, that's going to control ultimately the survivorship, and the survivorship would be with the surviving spouse, instantly. So that is known as a tenants by entirety deed. Very powerful deed in the state of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, Lockwood, you know, a couple of things that I would mention about the tenants by entirety deed is that, you know, this right of survivorship trumps any type of language you might have in a will. So let's say you have, you're married, you have your property with your spouse, and your will says this property A, goes to my church.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the will says. Okay, and it's just as clear as can be. But the property is held tenants by entirety between spouses. Well, upon the death of this person who indicates in their will it goes to their church, the property does not go to the church, it goes to the spouse. So that is, I think most people kind of understand that joint with right of survivorship concept, but some people don't understand that when you have express language in a will or any type of language in a will that would otherwise pass that property by the deceased, it does not control over a joint with right of survivorship designation. So there's one to mention that, and then also there is an element of asset protection too when we're talking about tenants by entirety property. Because let's say that spouses own property together, husband and wife own property together, and one of them is in a business venture that goes south and gets sued, and there's a judgment that is entered against, let's say, the husband. And that judgment, that's when I say judgment, what I mean is that he's been sued, there's been a trial, or there's been a hearing on a summary judgment, and the court has entered a money judgment against this person, against this husband. Well, that money judgment, of course, is a lien on real property, but it cannot extend to tenants by entirety property.
It cannot.
It would not extend to property that's tenants by entirety with husband and wife. Now, let's say the wife died. Mm-hmm. Well, if the wife died, and then obviously we've just learned right of survivorship, it all goes to the husband. Then that lien, boom, attaches to all of that.
Okay.
So, in the event, however, the lawsuit was against the husband and wife, and the judgment was against both of them, then the judgment would attach to the tenants by entirety property.
Wow. Okay. So to understand this, if the judgment is against one individual of the spousal unit, we'll use that description, and that individual dies, the transfer of the title of that property, of course, completely goes to the survivor, but the judgment does not.
No, it does not. The judgment does not transfer to the survivor, because after all, the judgment was not, you know, the judgment of the survivor. The judgment was the judgment of the wife or the husband or whoever it might be. And what Wes is just simply saying is that if there is a judgment against one spouse, and it's against that spouse singularly, then that's not going to attach to the joint marital property.
Wow.
That's protected in North Carolina. Now, one more thing, Lockwood, is that a hybrid of this, a twist of these facts, are that the property is owned by more than one person, but that the language in the deed says that it is joint with right of survivorship between the parties.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, two business parties, okay? Mm-hmm. You and your wonderful brother,
right,
Walter. You all could have owned property, Walter Phillips and Lockwood Phillips, joint with right of survivorship.
Mm-hmm.
You all certainly are not married. You're not spouses under that category, but you decided put a property joint with right of survivorship. The language in the deed says that. So therefore, under those circumstances, that language is going to control. And if anything were to happen to one of the two, the property again would vest in the survivor with right of survivorship. So between spouses, you don't need that extra language, that added language with right of survivorship. You don't have to have that. It's automatic. But as between business partners or, you know, friends, neighbors, whoever the case might be, the language, if they're not married, would have to be added with right of survivorship. But you certainly can do that.
Okay. I can appreciate in the case of business partners that is an assumption, as you're just sharing with us. We'll get back to that in a moment. We've got Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us this morning. We're talking about ownership. And you used the word a few moments ago, the word powerful, particularly on the issue of tenants by entity and jointly. Tenants by entirety and jointly. That word powerful really does resonate. We've got more to come here with Let's Talk Legal, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. 7:43 in the morning here on Coastal Daybreak. We've got Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins joining us from Harvell and Collins. Let's Talk Legal. We're talking about ownership. Cecil, Wes, that's a pretty powerful statement we just shared with us earlier in the program. What else comes next?
Well, we talked about tenants by entirety property, which is a marital interest, and talked about the fact that with that, there's right of survivorship. So the property passes to the survivor spouse. In the event that one spouse dies, it passes completely to the survivor spouse. We mentioned, of course, joint with right of survivorship. That also carries with it the right of survivorship, as we've indicated, just like tenants by entirety, so that in the event that one of the joint owners passes away, then by operation of law, his or her interest then passes to the remaining joint owners of that property. Mm-hmm. Now, in your tenants by entirety situation, that would always be spouses, two owners. But in a situation with joint with right of survivorship, that could be two or more. I mean, it could be 100 joint owners. You never see that, but it could be conceivably. So, and as Cecil indicated, a joint with right of survivorship designation is something that has to be expressly set forth in the document in which you receive the property. For example, the deed would state right on its face joint with right of survivorship.
Mm-hmm.
In the event that the deed doesn't state that, and again, we can receive property by different ways. I mean, deed is one way. That's the easiest way to explain it for the program here. But of course, we can receive property through inheritance, through the language in a trust, through the language in a will, by intestate. So there's other ways we can receive property, but for purposes of describing this, just referring to a deed in which one person conveyed it to another, or people conveyed it to other people, that's the best way to describe it to make it simple. So in the event we have a deed that doesn't have the language joint with right of survivorship in it, but it has multiple co-owners,
mm-hmm.
This could be siblings, this could be friends, this could be it could be anyone. It could be business partners. Then, even if there's no other language in the deed about whether this is what the designation is, meaning is it tenants in common, is it joint, is it this, is it that, then by operation of law, it defaults to becoming tenants in common.
Okay.
And the tenants in common interest is an interest that is an interest based on, we refer to it as an undivided interest, but what it really is a percentage interest based on how much of the property you actually received. And it's a percentage of the whole. Okay, let's say there's a 1 acre tract that is being conveyed, all right? And it's conveyed to three people.
Uh-huh.
And these three people receive it tenants in common, because the deed doesn't say that it's joint with tenants, joint tenants with right of survivorship. Well, that doesn't mean that person A has this one-third corner, person B has this one-third corner, and person C has this one-third corner. It means that each of them have one-third of the whole. That means they own one-third of all of it. Uh-huh. They have a right to go on any part of it, use it how they want to,
mm-hmm.
and so do their other co-owners.
Ooh.
So there's some other aspects of that tenants in common ownership, and I'll kick it over to Cecil so he can talk about those a little bit.
Okay, I have a quick question. When you're establishing the deeds, is this something that is done at the time of purchase or acquisition? Is this something that, because I'm thinking there are business partners that are listening to this saying, you know, do we in fact have this instrument in place? Cecil?
Well, Lockwood, that's a good question. And the answer is that it should be discussed and uh-huh. considered, and should be a conscious deed with legal advice.
Uh-huh.
And yet, you know, as you can imagine, so many times that's not the case. Particularly, well, in all of these examples of different types of ownerships of property. But a lot of times a property will get closed out at a closing and will be put in the husband's name.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the wife has been assuming all along that the property was in both names.
Right.
And then we get to the estate side and find out, well, sorry, but the estate, the property is just in your husband's name.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that makes the point that, you know, this is the kind of thing that we review when we have clients in the office and they're doing planning. We pull the deeds and we look at them, and sometimes we absolutely discover some things that's inconsistent with the planning. And so we have to then bring that to the attention of the client.
Mm-hmm.
So business partners sometimes have property titled and a name isn't on it, or a name isn't proper on it, or there isn't clarity as to how the ownership is.
Right.
We have cases like this. We have deeds that are ambiguous as to what the ownership would happen to be. So absolutely, it is something that needs to be reviewed and looked at. And hopefully, maybe the deed follows the intention of the people who own the property, be it a husband and wife, be it business partners, be it siblings. Maybe it follows their intention. And on the other hand, you know, maybe it doesn't, and there needs to be a correction deed done and correct that intention, Lockwood.
That was the question I was wondering. Can you rectify it? You can. All right, we'll take a quick break. More to come here. I'm thinking, Cecil and Wes, that recognizing, you know, the issue of spousal units, and I want to talk about this. I've got a quick question about this in relationship to co-ownership by couples who are not necessarily married. I'm curious about that. If we get a moment right after this break, we've got Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us this morning here on Let's Talk Legal. Let's Talk Legal. We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins about ownership and the issue of deeds. And as we were going to the break, Wes, Cecil, I was going to ask you about the fact that there you've got instances where young couples who are not married may buy a home or property. And does it, you know, whereas if it's if there is marriage, the you know, you said earlier it's a powerful decision. I mean, a powerful situation because you have tenants by entirety jointly. But what happens in the instance of a couple that are, you know, very, very benignly buy a house or a home, but they aren't married?
It can become a big problem. All right. So we see this fairly often where, you know, folks are not married. They decide to be, you know, financially committed to each other by buying a home together. And either the home is, we see it in different ways. It could be that the home is tenants in common between girlfriend and boyfriend. We can see that it's just in the name of one of them, but the mortgage is in both names. We see all kind of situations where it really doesn't become much of a problem until one of two things happens. Number one, they break up.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, one of the two parties stops paying on the indebtedness.
Right.
Okay. One of those two things normally then spins them off, in many cases, into an attorney's office.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly see this situation fairly often.
So
then we're in a situation where you have, let's say, you know, jointly owned property, tenants in common, both boyfriend and girlfriend own the property, and then you've got, you know, the mortgage on the property, and only one of the parties is paying. So that means the other party is getting a free ride, right?
Right.
They're getting half their indebtedness paid off, right, because only one of the parties is paying. And that doesn't seem very fair. That normally happens after there's a breakup.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that forces the boyfriend, girlfriend, the couple into a situation where either one party has to buy the other out, the property has to be sold, or we end up in a partition. And in many cases, from what I see, the parties, because their relationship has fallen apart, they can't see eye to eye with regard to how to deal with this house. A lot of times, from what I see, greed sets in. So the way that kind of tie gets broken, where there's husband or the boyfriend and girlfriend are just not seeing eye to eye. They're not together anymore. Maybe one of them is living in the house and one of them is paying on the indebtedness and the other one's not, but is their equity is increasing in the property as a result of the other paying, is we have to force a sale of the property through a partition. And the partition can become unnecessarily expensive, and certainly, stressful. There are costs associated with it, where the commissioner being appointed to sell the property. So that, in most cases, is not advisable.
Right.
Because I see that arriving at, a problem more often than I would like to. Cecil probably has some additional comments on that.
Well, there's just all sorts of permutations to your question, Lockwood. I have people right now, their girlfriend, boyfriend, she's bought a property. He then proceeds to tell me that he's going to build a garage on the property for his business. And then he's busy out there building this garage and telling me about it. He's going to be real proud of this garage that he's building, again, to store some of his supplies. Well, of course, unfortunately, Lockwood, I'm a lawyer, and I've got this lawyer brain going
right.
24 hours a
yeah.
day. And I say to my friend, I say, well, now look, we got to talk about this.
Right.
I mean, you don't own that property. Your girlfriend does. I know y'all are very close. I know you say you're all are going to get married eventually. But in the meantime, you're improving this property with a, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 garage. You don't own the property. If she dies and she does have children from a prior marriage, you're going to be up the creek without the paddle.
Right.
Unless we do some legal work here. So the two of you need to come on in the office and let's see about this. These are the scenarios that Wes and I hear every day. Another one. The property's in her name, has a mortgage, but he pays the mortgage, okay, because of the fact that they're in a relationship.
Right.
And so he's paying the mortgage, and then finally they break up, and he says to Wes, he says, well, Mr. Collins, I paid the mortgage
right,
for five
right.
years on the property.
Right.
She didn't pay a dime.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is what these are. Again, the devil is in the details, and there needs to be some discussion.
Absolutely. And as I know, we're probably
Lockwood, let me mention something on that mortgage scenario that Cecil just set forth. There's a way to get your contribution back out of that, but it requires some court action.
Uh-huh.
What I mean by that is if one party paid the mortgage and the other party basically got a free ride during that period of time, and then the parties are not together anymore, then the court will equalize that out, doing basically an accounting of who paid for what. But that only takes place upon a partition.
Okay. We're talking with Harvell and Collins, Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. So many questions to ask, more conversation. I'm confident on this. I think the one issue that I'm hearing out of this, gentleman, is, as you said at the very beginning, Cecil, devil's in the details. They need to do it at the very beginning. Again, contact Harvell and Collins. And by the way, a local number, 726-9050, 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. That's Harvell and A-N-D. I'm going to spell that out. harvellandcollins.com. Gentlemen, as always, thanks for being with us.